Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Name Parthasti Kartavyam.
Name Parthasti Kartavyam.
Trishu loke shukinchana.
Trishu loke shukinchana.
Nana vaptam avaptavyam.
Nana vaptam avaptavyam.
Varta eva chakarmani.
Varta eva chakarmani.
Name parthasti kartavyam.
Name parthasti kartavyam.
Trishu loke shukinchana.
Trishu loke shukinchana.
Nana vaptam avaptavyam.
Nana vaptam avaptavyam.
Varta eva chakarmani.
Varta eva chakarmani.
Mine. Partha.
Partha.
O son of Pritha.
O son of Pritha.
Asti.
There is.
Kartavya.
Kartavya.
Prescribed duty.
Prescribed duty.
Trishu.
In the three.
Lokeshu.
Planetary systems.
Kinchana.
Any.
Na.
Nothing.
Anavaptam.
Wanted.
Avaptavyam.
To be gained.
Varte.
I am engaged.
Eva.
Certainly.
Cha. Also. Karmani. In prescribed duty. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. O son of Pritha, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. Nor am I in want of anything, nor have I need to obtain anything. And yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is described in the Vedic literatures as follows. Tamishvaranam paramam maheshvaram. Tam devatanam paramam cha daivatam. Patim patinam paramam parastad. Vidama devam bhuvanesham ibhyam. Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate. Na satat samas chabyadikascha drishyate parasya shaktir vividaiva shuyate swabhaviki jnana bulakriyacha. So the Supreme Lord is the controller of all other controllers, and he is the greatest of all the diverse planetary leaders. Everyone is under his control. All entities are delegated with particular power only by the Supreme Lord. They are not supreme themselves. He is also worshipable by all demigods and is the supreme director of all directors. Therefore, he is transcendental to all kinds of material leaders and controllers and is worshipable by all. There is no one greater than him, and he is the supreme cause of all causes. He does not possess bodily form like that of an ordinary living entity. There is no difference between his body and his soul. He is absolute. All his senses are transcendental. Any one of his senses can perform the action of any other sense. Therefore, no one is greater than him or equal to him. His potencies are multifarious, and thus his deeds are automatically performed as a natural sequence. This is Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Since everything is in full opulence in the personality of Godhead and is existing in full truth, there is no duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead to perform. One who must receive the result of work as some designated duty. But one who has nothing to achieve within the three planetary systems certainly has no duty. And yet, Lord Krishna is engaged on the battlefield of Kurukshetra as the leader of the Kshatriyas, because the Kshatriyas are duty-bound to give protection to the distressed. Although he is above all the regulations of the revealed scriptures, he does not do anything that violates the revealed scriptures. We think we have so many obligations. We have so much to accomplish in this world, so many obligations, so many ambitions. And here's the Supreme Lord. He doesn't have any. He has no obligations, and he has no purpose to fulfill in this world. Why does he even come here then? He has no interest. What can he accomplish with the facilities of the material existence? The material energy is there only for exploitation, for selfish sense gratification. The Supreme Lord doesn't need that. He has got countless devotees tending to his gratification. If you are provided more than you need, why do you need to work to get more? If you're a guest and your hosts are filling you up to the neck, your problem is you're eating too much, not too little. You don't have to think about going out to a restaurant if your hosts are taking care of you more than amply. So Krishna's devotees are taking care of all his desires and needs. And he doesn't have any devotees. He can take care of them himself. Whatever he wants, he gets. He has his energies who provide for him. On one hand, Natasya Karyam Karanam Chuvijite. Karyam. The word has different meanings, but here it means he doesn't have any obligation. There's nothing that he has to do. He only does what he wants to do. That's like a child who theoretically can just play all day. Although even children are given obligations, and when they're 5 years old, then they have to go to school. That's the end of their freedom. But the personality of God is eternally youthful. He's always performing leelas. He's always playing. He never has to go to school if he doesn't want to. He never has any obligation, even when he grows up, to work. Unless he wants to. It's all for him, just playing, doing what he wants to do. And we, none of us, even the infant, are in that position. If the infant child is actually free just to play, and he can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, why is he crying all the time? Why is he getting into fights with his brother? Why is he distressed and dissatisfied? Because although he's living in the small child is living in a fantasy world in which he is the absolute center and the magic controller of everything, it doesn't work. His desires are not fulfilled the way he wants, and therefore he's frustrated. But the Supreme Lord, not only is he neglectful of all obligations, he doesn't have any. He's like a baby, a child, just doing what he wants to do. Free play. It's always recess time for Krishna. But he doesn't get frustrated. His desires are never frustrated because he possesses all sorts of energies that make sure that what he wants is fulfilled. His desires are fulfilled by his potencies. Parasya shaktir vividayava shriyate. Swabhaviki. Those potencies are autonomous. Like automaton is a robot. You build a machine that can work like a man. Then you just tell the robot. You know, you can even talk to him in English. I think the original robot was Polish, right? Some Polish man invented the robot. Yes. But anyway, you have an English-speaking robot. You just talk to him and say, okay, make lunch. You know, give him the rest of the menu. And the robot will go into the kitchen and cook lunch. Carries out your desires autonomously. He has the intelligence and power to do what you want. What you want. Krishna's done better than that. He's created his potencies as fully autonomous. Not only they do exactly what Krishna wants them to do, but he gave, to make it more interesting, he gave them a special option. They can refuse to do what he wants. You know, this is risky. You have to actually be very playful to create robots or create an entity that may choose to refuse to do what you want. But this element creates the possibility of love. Love between the Lord and his creatures has to be voluntary. Therefore, the Lord creates at least his marginal potency, the jivas, the potency category that we belong to, are created as fully autonomous, even to the point of having choice not to cooperate. It would not be good business if, you know, the Japanese manufacturers were producing robots like that, that might put the car together according to plan or might just decide to do something else. That they don't want to do. They want their robots to be obedient. But Krishna is more liberal and he's more curious to see what will happen if he gives us freedom to choose. Who will surrender to me? Who really loves me? And he gives us a chance. Every one of us, every living entity has got the choice. Not only once. It's not that you make the mistake and then you're cast into ignorance and hell forever. You get the choice over and over again. Even if you made the right choice, you have an option to change your choice to the wrong choice, or vice versa, anytime. That's the real substance of our freedom. Because once we choose, then we're subordinated to his greater potencies. We're just small potency. And Krishna has many bigger potencies that are much more powerful and all-encompassing than we are. Namely, two categories. His material energies, which are big and mighty, and his spiritual energies, which are even mightier. And we're just puny fractions of energy, little sparks. We have the choice, which side do we want to be on? You know, two mighty armies, the spiritual army and the material army. And we're just little peons, citizens who happen to be living in the middle of the battlefield. But we have to choose, which side do we want to be on? The spiritual side or the material side? That's the essence of our choice. If we understand, here's the Supreme Lord. Unlike us, he's not under so many obligations and restrictions. He's free to do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, with whom he wants, however he wants. And his potencies make sure that all arrangements are made to fulfill his desires, always. Why not be on his side then? Why not join his pleasure pastimes, where everything is free? Krishna just doesn't want only to be the absolute dominator. That he gets in Vaikuntha. Everyone is totally submissive to him. And nobody says anything that might be in disagreement with his choice. Like a management of a company that's very autocratic and doesn't want to hear anybody's opinion, just wants his own, the manager just wants his own opinion echoed. Yes, yes, sir. Surrounded by yes men. This is the Lord in Vaikuntha. But when Krishna enters the realm of intimate love, then he enjoys letting his, just like he gives all the living entities the free choice to cooperate or not, those who actually love him, they may be so fortunate and develop such pure love for Krishna that that love brings Krishna under control. Shri Krishna Akarshani Chasa. Pure devotion, pure love for Krishna is so powerful it even brings him under control. And he submits to the desire of his devotees. He is appearing in this world. He doesn't have any duty. He has nothing to accomplish. It doesn't fulfill any of his purposes. Even the creation of this world doesn't fulfill any purpose for him. He creates it for the living entities who want to rebel. He gives them a world in which they can pretend to be independent of him. But apart from fulfilling their desires, it suits no purpose of his. There's nothing for him advantageous in the material realm. But he creates it for us, because we want it. And then he enters it. He comes into this world. And he comes into this world in many different forms. The Lord expands his personality in multiple form, in multiple aspects. We see different aspects of his personality. Just like even an ordinary human being, he doesn't have a one-sided personality. Of course, if someone is mentally ill, he may have split personalities, but that's abnormal. That's out of control, you know, and causes distress and confusion. That you've got 10 different names and 10 different persons, you don't know who you are, and everybody thinks you're crazy. No, but even in normal life, a person has more than one aspect to his personality. The man is, officially, the man is a judge in the court. And people have to treat him with respect, or else they get, you know, they'll get sentenced for contempt of court. If they just ignore the judge or be impolite to him, they go to jail or get a fine. They have to show respect to him. He's the judge. And he has the power to sentence a man to death or to award somebody, you know, a crore in a suit. Okay, you win the suit. The other side has to give you one crore. He declares. He has the power. So he's greatly respected in the court. But when the same man goes home to his wife and children, they have a different attitude to him. The son can demand, "Daddy, get down. I want to ride on your back like a horse." And the same noble judge, his honor, is you know, walking with four legs on the floor like a horse, with a child on his back. Same man, but different aspects of his personality. What to speak of God, whose personality has infinite depth and unlimited aspects. So for him to incarnate in every millennium and on every different planet, in all the different species of life, and in all different forms to perform various pastimes, is no great difficulty. He can do it, but why does he do it? When he has no obligation to fulfill and no purpose to achieve in this world. It's discussed. The question is discussed. Lord Brahma tries to explain it. Why does the Lord appear? He says, Swecha mayasya nata bhuta mayasya kopi. None of your various appearances in different times of history, in different places, in different forms. None of these appearances are impelled by material law. Unlike the conditioned souls, you're not forced by karma, by your past pious or sinful deeds, to take those births. Although you'll read in the Padma Purana that Krishna was cursed by Bhrigu Muni. I don't remember why. But Bhrigu Muni cursed him, he has to take 10 births. This is supposed to be the Dasha Avatars. Supposedly because Krishna got cursed by Bhrigu Muni for some offense. But this is just a pretext. Krishna takes those 10 avatars, and not just 10, but billions of different avatars. Swechamaya, not because he got cursed. That's just, you know, a pastime arranged to make some pretext. Just another enjoyment of Krishna's, to pretend to get cursed. That he has to take 10... Birth is 10 different incarnations. It's no karmic force that makes Krishna appear. So Brahma says, natu bhutamayasya, not under any material law do you make your appearances, but swechamaya. All of your appearances are swechamaya, self-decided, according to your own will. As you decide according to your sweet will, you take your births. Swa icha maya. But actually, our acharyas, Srila Jiva Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti, read something else into that. Although swa icha literally should be taken to mean your own desire, swa also means what belongs to you, your own, say, devotee. And they reinterpret this phrase to mean, Krishna, you take birth according to the desires of your devotees. This is the real idea. This is what Brahma is really getting at. Not that Krishna just randomly, because he has no purpose to fulfill. So does he just do things at random? That also can be called craziness. You have no purpose to do anything. You just do things incoherently at random. No, that's not how Krishna behaves, just whimsically. He's acting in this world, since he has no purpose of his own. He acts just to fulfill whatever desires his devotees have. That's why Krishna created the material world in the first place. Why he expanded himself as Mahavishnu to produce material world. Because the non-devotees, the rebellious living entities, wanted a separate place. They wanted to move out of Vaikuntha and have some place of their own to live. Now for his devotees, if he's taking care of the non-devotees like that, what about his devotees who happen to come into this world? So we're answering the question why Krishna comes into this world. Now we have a side question. Why did the devotees come here? What are they doing here? So, either it is that they fell down. They lost their position in the spiritual world because they made the same mistake that everyone else makes, of rebelling against Krishna in some way. But they recover, some conditioned souls recover their remembrance that they're actually Krishna's servant. And they want to return to Krishna's service. And therefore they reform themselves with the help of the Vaishnavas and the Shastras. They reform themselves and become again devotees even while living in the material world. This we know. We're members of such a society of persons who have been recovered from illusion by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and other Vaishnavas. We're now being reinstated gradually in our position as devotees of Krishna, eternal servants. So some living entities in the material world, they suffered a fall down, but now they're recovering, and now they happen to be devotees of the Lord stuck in the material world for now. And others, they're eternal servants of the Lord, and they're sent here on a special mission to preach or to do some particular service for the Lord. So there are few living entities who are here only because Krishna sent them here for special purpose. So that answers why the jivas are here. And Krishna comes here because he's got devotees in this place. He's got devotees in the material world. Some of them are new devotees who were fallen and now are recovering. And some of them happen to be his eternal servants who are in the material world to carry out particular services. For all of those devotees, Krishna appears to give them his association. Parintranaya Sadhunam is the first purpose that Krishna fulfills, to deliver his devotees. But the devotees, they're protected by Krishna. Whether he appears or remains invisible, they're always under his protection through his energies. The deliverance that devotees need is to be relieved of the distress of not having Krishna's association. He appears and shows himself to his devotees to relieve their distress of being in a world where he's not appearing. So he appears for his devotees. And devotees have individual desires to see Krishna and have relationship with Krishna in some particular mood. Each individual devotee has a different mood, and he therefore wants to see Krishna in a particular form. So when devotees are there who want Krishna to appear in a particular form, he appears in that form, swechamaya, according to the specific desires of his devotees. So this is something we can understand from this verse. Not only Krishna, he's talking about karma yoga, and he's saying, I'm also an example of karma yoga. I act out of duty. I don't have my duty. The duty that I perceive for myself is that I should set a good example, and I should establish the principles of religion in this world by acting properly myself. Set a good example. If I don't do it, everyone else will think that they don't have to follow the principles of religion. Haribol. That's one way, one level in which we can understand this. But the deeper understanding, more subtle understanding, is that Krishna, everything he does in this material world is primarily for the benefit of his devotees who happen to be in this world. He acts, he comes here and performs activity to attract and reclaim his devotees, to take them back with him, back to Godhead. Therefore he works, therefore he performs his pleasure pastimes and performs valorous deeds and does everything else he does. Paritranaya Sadhunam saves the devotees from danger. Although they don't have to be saved, they're never really in danger. But Krishna arranges dramatic situations in which the devotees seem to be on the brink of calamity. Like Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison of Kamsa. And he killed their sons. He actually committed murder. It wasn't just he was a paper tiger just scaring them. He actually murdered 6 of their sons, one after another, each year. So he wasn't just a threat. He was actually a terrible, very violent tyrant. And he was oppressing Vasudeva and Devaki, incredibly. So that dramatic situation was set up. Actually, those 6 sons who were killed, they regained their status as demigods because of that. They had to go through that. They had been cursed previously. They're the 6 sons of Brahma who criticized him for becoming attracted to his daughter. They were cursed to take birth 3 times. This is their 3rd birth. By being killed by Kamsa, they were freed from the curse and could go back to the heavenly planet. So that's how Krishna delivers his devotees. He creates
a dramatic situation that seems to be disastrous or on the brink of disaster, but actually his devotees know that they're always protected. Devaki and Vasudev, they were never suffering from material anxiety, from material fear. A pure devotee never has any material anxiety or fear. And the proof of it is that even being so oppressed by Kamsa, both Devaki and Vasudev kept their Krishna consciousness and did not suffer, even after their children were murdered, one after another. They continued to trust Krishna, and they were actually experiencing, believe it or not, even in that condition, they were always experiencing the bliss of Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna always protects his devotees, even when it seems like they're helpless. But he arranges these dramatic situations. And then he comes, and he kills Kamsa, and delivers Devaki and Vasudev. Great dramatic performance of delivering his devotees. Vinashaya to Dushkritam, and killing Kamsa and all the other evil tormentors of his devotees. And he reestablishes the principles of religion, as he is doing here, speaking to the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, to establish, again, the proper understanding of what is the duty of man. Krishna does all these things, but the real essence of it all is that he comes to this world to deliver his devotees by giving them his association and by displaying his wonderful pastimes, whatever they involve, killing demons, delivering devotees, establishing religious principles, everything else, it's all his pleasure pastimes, which should attract us to want to gain his company again and go back to where he lives. Bhajate tadrishi krida yakshutva tatparo bhavet. Krishna is always performing, when he comes to this world, he's performing so many different kinds of wonderful pastimes that will attract our attention and make us very interested in him. And when we're interested in Krishna and we lose interest in the petty selfish gratifications of material life and the silly ambitions of material success, when we lose interest in that and regain our interest in the things that Krishna does and in wanting to participate in those activities with Krishna, then we've been delivered. That's deliverance. Not that Krishna's going to come and pay our debts or defeat our enemies for us. That's not what we need. We need Krishna to attract us to his service. That's the deliverance we really need. Then paying off our debts, we won't have any more debts, and we won't have any more enemies if we become purely Krishna conscious. Just by hearing about Krishna with attention and love, and becoming attracted to him and his wonderful pastimes and his wonderful devotees. That's the essence of religion. And that's what Krishna comes to this world for. Actually, he comes here to recover his forgetful devotees. Hare Krishna. So are there any questions or comments? I don't know if I can see the hands, but... Yes, Prabhu.
You have this pastime where, because Krishna wanted somebody who is capable of fighting him.
Yes.
Therefore, Jaya and Vijaya came down.
Yes, that's Jiva Goswami's explanation, yes.
So then, here we have Krishna who wanted some pleasure.
Yes.
But in the process, Jaya and Vijaya, when they came down, they harmed so many sadhus, they did so many things. How do we reconcile that?
It's all, everything that happens is right, is just. If anybody got harmed, it's for their good. And they weren't really harmed. Anybody who, you know, suffers, say, collateral damage in the course of Krishna's pastimes is actually not harmed. By being involved in those pastimes, even to get killed, you're benefited in ways that you cannot imagine. You know, to be killed in the course of Krishna's pastimes means liberation. If Krishna himself or his devotee kills you, or even if some demon kills you who is directly in a conflict with Krishna, then your participation in that lila, in that, you know, peripheral way of being in harm's way, means you're saved. Means you're, that's, if not the perfection of your spiritual life, at least that's the beginning of your real spiritual life. You've come into contact with Krishna and his devotees, even through the enemies of Krishna. That means your life becomes all auspicious. No matter what seems to be happening to you, it's all auspicious. Any involvement in Krishna's pastimes. So, we may think, well, Krishna's pastimes, they were all finished 5,000 years ago. What do we have to do with that? We can only read about it. But no, Krishna appeared again 500 years ago, and those pastimes aren't finished yet. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, one of his main pastimes is establishing and spreading the Sankirtan of Chaitanya, the Sankirtan of chanting and hearing Krishna's glories. That pastime of Mahaprabhu is not finished yet. And we're being given opportunities to participate in those pastimes of the establishment and the spread of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. This is opportunity to become part of Krishna's pastimes. They're not finished yet. Not for another 10,000 years. We have this opportunity. And we can join it right now. One is just being founded at the beginning. That's the best time to join. Those who joined ISKCON when Prabhupada was first starting it got his very intimate association. When I joined in 1973, that wasn't possible anymore. When Prabhupada came the first time that I was there, 9 days after I joined, Prabhupada came to New York. But I wasn't allowed into the room when Prabhupada came in. They only allowed the older devotees to go and do arti to him in his quarters. I wasn't even allowed to go into the room. Now, next morning, I was able to sit in the Bhagavatam class and hear Prabhupada. I didn't get a chance to go talk to Prabhupada, not for 2 years, and even then only for a few minutes. So I lost out on that opportunity because I joined a few years too late. You know, to have Prabhupada's very close association like that, physical association. We have to take now the opportunity to associate. We can join later on, after five lifetimes if we want. It'll be going on for 10,000 years. But we can join now and be a pioneer in the establishment of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan all over the world. You can have your own city, own country to preach to if you want. There's still countries where no preaching is being done. You can have your own country, you know, and be the pioneer for Lord Chaitanya. You want it, you can have it. You know, we can be pioneers, we can be part of this while it's still new. That will miss the opportunity if we hesitate. We should, you know, try to take the opportunity to join now. We can join later, but why not join now and get the full benefit? Special benefit that we won't get later on. Hare Krishna. Okay.
Like you were explaining how Devaki and Vasudev, they never got affected by whatever they went through.
Well, they never suffered because they're pure devotees. They were always in bliss. Although it looks like different on the outside.
So we have this pastime of Jadabharat where he's talking to Maharaj Ramugan. So in Bhagavatam it's mentioned that Maharaj Rahugana was not speaking properly to Jadabharat. He felt waves of dissatisfaction in his mind.
Yes.
Before
or after? You mean after he insulted Jadavar? Then he felt dissatisfied?
After.
Well, because he just committed an aparadha against a great Vaishnava. And he would...
Jadavar felt
remorse. What did he feel?
Waves of dissatisfaction in his mind.
About what?
Because of the way Maharaj Rahugan spoke to him.
Oh. Not... Okay, not that he felt insulted personally, but he's... because what was his reaction? Not to get angry or to insult the king back. He reacted with a very cool head
and trying to enlighten the king that, wait a minute, you think you're a big king. You know, you're actually a conditioned soul under the complete control of illusion. So he talked to him philosophically for the benefit of the king. He was dissatisfied, thinking, here's a lost, confused soul that's so foolish that he doesn't think twice to offend a servant of the Lord like me. He didn't take it as a personal insult, but he saw this is not good. This unfortunate man is committing Vaishnava Parad. He can suffer a lot for that. Let me try to catch him and stop him before it's too late. Out of compassion, out of concern for it. He was upset by how this unfortunate living entity, Rahugana, was going to get himself in serious trouble. Let me stop him before it's too late. Okay?
Pardon? You said that Krishna has many aspects to his personality. So, does Krishna have something that he identifies himself? No matter, maybe he's acting naturally and he's not obligated to do anything. Even keeping all that, does he have any cause? Does he identify himself as, I am this?
And then everything else is not important, or everything else is not his real life? No. Even though you can assign a hierarchy, and some devotees are more dear to Krishna than others. Narada Muni, in as recorded in the first part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatana Goswami, was trying to find out who's the best, Krishna's most favorite devotee. And at the end, after he met many devotees and they all sent him to somebody else, telling Narada, I'm not the best devotee, someone else is more dear to Krishna. And he got sent around all over the universe and met so many great devotees. And then met the greatest devotees. And he found out that the absolute greatest devotees are the gopis of Vrindavan. They are the most surrendered. But it's not that Krishna is only interested in the gopis. And everything else is superficial and unreal to him. No, when Krishna sat down, when Narada finally came to meet Krishna in Dwarka, after traveling throughout the universe and finding so many devotees, one greater than the next, Krishna invited him to lunch. And Narada said, I have now the opportunity to ask you a question. I'm still confused. Who's your greatest devotee anyway? And Krishna said, don't you get the idea after all this? They're all very dear to me. Every one of them, every one you met, is my dearest devotee. So Krishna is Akila Rasamrita Murti. He doesn't like only the rasa dance, only dancing with the gopis. He wants to enjoy the whole gamut of his pastimes and all his different kinds of devotees. So, no, he wants to be all of it. It's not that only one aspect of his personality is significant for him. He's not like this kind of person who only lives for the weekend and hates his work, and is just, dragging himself through his Monday through Friday life. Krishna is doing what he wants to do all the time. If he didn't like it, he wouldn't do it. So he wants to have that variety. He wants to be on all those levels, all those aspects of his personality, and he wants to have different kinds of devotees, not all the same. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
So the Devaki and Vasudeva, they were seemingly going through those difficulties, they were experiencing bliss.
We have to understand that, although it's almost impossible to understand how it could be. If you had 6 children of yours murdered one after another each year, how could you maintain equilibrium and still be happy? But that's the potency of devotional service. And even Yasmin Stito Nadukena Gurunami Vichalyate. This is Krishna's statement in the Gita. Situated in the pleasure of devotional service, you cannot be shaken even by the most terrible material suffering. And that's proof. The Devaki and Vasudev stayed happy in Krishna consciousness even after having their children murdered. And then they were brought back to life again later on. Krishna did fix everything in the end.
That answers? Okay. I was about to...
Can we discuss the point about the variable in the further?
Yeah, like...
Because in the purport, Prabhupada says that it's due to the material body that his senses were certainly agitated. And he was insulted, but later, due to the king's submission, he excused him. So I'm also curious now.
I didn't remember that part.
Well, it's not that a devotee doesn't have feelings. It doesn't mean that what he was experiencing was material or inappropriate. A devotee living in this world doesn't come in a spiritual body. When Krishna or incarnation of Krishna appears, he appears in his self-same spiritual body. Sambhavami Atmamaya. But when devotees appear in this world, they take material bodies, generally. So whatever they're doing is through a material body, with material senses and mind. Still, it's appropriate. They're using material vehicle spiritually. They're using it appropriately for Krishna's service, with very rare exceptions. Sometimes a devotee becomes confused and may make a mistake because he's not God. But generally, devotees do everything appropriate because they're always thinking of how to satisfy Krishna. So I'm not sure, I'm not sure how to take that. The Chaturbharata was reacting with his material mind. Does that mean he was reacting inappropriately? I don't know. And even if he was, it was just momentary. He quickly got his senses back. Devotees do make mistakes. They do experience material agitations, but they don't succumb to them. Chaturbharata didn't pick a fight with the king. He maybe thought for a moment that he was angry, but that in 1 second he got his senses together and he spoke to the king in the most appropriate way. He made him Krishna conscious. If you can make someone Krishna conscious by being angry at them, then go ahead and be angry. You can indulge your anger if you can use it to make people Krishna conscious. But if you can't, if you're just driving people away from Krishna by getting angry at them, then don't do it. Okay? All right. Yes, Prabhu?
We went Krishna killed Krishna, but Krishna has the intention of killing the Krishna itself.
Yes.
But Krishna is so merciful that he has delivered him also. Krishna also. So, is that mercy is equal to that given to the devotees also?
It's special. Narada Muni is amazed. You killed her and gave her liberation. But not just ordinary liberation. You let her become like your mother, attain this motherly love for you, because she didn't simply come to kill you, you know, as some ugly demon, but she came disguised as a mother, and she gave you her breast for you to drink. Therefore, Krishna decided, okay, that even though she wanted to kill me, I accept her as my mother, because there was an inkling of devotion there, attraction to Krishna. He showed Putana kindness that he didn't have to. You know, she didn't deserve it, but he was much more kind to her than she deserved. That's Krishna's free will. He doesn't have to just follow the law, the letter of the law. He can go beyond it and give you what you don't even deserve. So why did Krishna behave like that? Because he chose to. He wasn't following some law that tells them he had to do that. He did it because he can choose to act and show his favor to anybody he wants to, even someone who hates him. But that doesn't mean that we should practice hating Krishna, thinking that he's going to treat us like he treated Putana. Very small chance of that. If we try to act like demons, we're going to get smashed. We won't benefit. We won't become attracted to Krishna. will be put under the illusory energy and forget Krishna. So don't do that. Don't act like Putana. You know, we should learn not to act like the demons, to act like the devotees instead. Okay.
Previous life was Bali Maharaj's daughter, and when Vamana came, she had very deeply, intensely contemplated on the motherly feeling on him. And at the end, when he started countering everything from Bali Maharaj, she got angry on him.
So she had a natural inclination to be attracted to Krishna, but she didn't practice what we understand to be proper devotional service. It is not the standard method to cultivate attraction to Krishna by hating him. Not recommended to be emulated, to be copied. Yes, it worked for her because she actually had spiritual assets. She actually was attracted to Krishna before her previous life. But we can't imitate that. We shouldn't become inimical to Krishna in any way. Even to be frustrated and angry at Krishna that he doesn't give us what we want. That's not a good idea. We should always be submissive to Krishna and always favorably disposed toward him, no matter what he does. Yata yata ta vidadatu lampato mat pranadatas tu se eva napara. No matter what harm Krishna does to me, no matter what neglect he submits me to, He's my Lord, life after life. I have no other Lord. He's my life and soul. I have no other. That should be the attitude. Okay? All right, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Gita.